But as soon as the people from Drumna came over, it increased the population greatly, I'm sure.
Well, I don't think they moved house so much. You know, it was within commuting distance of Drumna. But gradually, the old Drumna labour force fell by the wayside or found other more convenient, more accessible work down in Drumna and Crumlin and areas like that. Mm-hmm. So largely, they attracted the local population around Glendalkin and from here to Lucan.
You would have seen the village expand greatly in your time, I'm sure.
Yeah, I remember coming through the village the day I came for that interview. I remember thinking what a quiet, somnolent village this was. Not a soul stirring, so it seemed. And it was a very rural place. It was quite distant out from the city at that time. Mm-hmm. And a very small population.
Yeah.
But it has, we've been living here since that time, and we've experienced the growth and the expansion of Glendalkin over the period.
The location for the paper mills, was it an ideal location beside the river? And did it seem perfect?
It might have been in the around the turn of the century, the 1900s, the early 1900s, when there was a firm making paper for ammunition. They were supplying Kynox, I think, in Arklow, with paper for cartridges and things like that. It might have been justifiable at that time, but the river, Camac River, was relatively small. And while it produced some power for turbines initially, gradually the justification for having it in that particular spot diminished. But nevertheless, there was a core there of expertise and buildings and structures. So the operation persisted there up until, I guess, the late 70s, I think it was. But it caused tremendous pollution in the river, and that was a constant problem. And indeed, you'd see it down at Island Bridge, Kingsbridge. You'd see the effluent coming in from the Camac, and it would, depending on which grade of paper, which colour paper was being manufactured in Glendalkin, you could see the results in the Liffey at that time. So a constant endeavour was to improve the pollution control, and that was particularly important. It became much more important in later years.
Talk to me about the workforce. Were they skilled workers? I mean, was there generations of say the same family there, and from a skilled point of view, did they go through apprenticeship? Is this what you witnessed? Or,
well, on the maintenance side, yes, there were formal apprenticeships there. On the papermaking side, people came in from primary school, I suppose, and worked in the mill, and gradually assimilated the work practices and gradually got more and more responsibility. It was learning on the job, literally, rather than being formally trained as such. But there were generations, certainly in my time, I remember. Do bear in mind that the operation restarted sometime around 1936, so most of the people that came in there, initially they were from Scotland because there was a core of expertise in Scotland making paper, fine papers. And gradually they trained up the local population, and they became charge hands and foremen.
So there wouldn't have been a tradition like Jacob's, where a father, maybe the son followed the father, because the factory really wasn't...
Well, it wasn't there that long, but gradually through the 50s and 60s, yes, the next generation started to come in there.
Yeah.
And there was, to an extent, you know, a father's son, and indeed many daughters as well.
Yeah. Who was your who were you answerable to?
I was answerable to the chief engineer at that time, a man called Terry O'Neill, Terence O'Neill, and I learned a lot from him.
Did you?
Yes, yes. Well, he gave us our head, and you know, we gradually developed our expertise and passed on that as best we could.
For the years that you were there, were you happy in your job?
Yeah, I think it was, looking back on it, it was a very happy place to work. It was, you know, it was almost a community. And, you know, majority of the people were Clondalkin people. And, yes, looking back on it, I was happy and missed the experience afterwards when I went elsewhere to work.
Yes, and you must talk to me now about the you were there during the strikes and the turmoil, I suppose.
In point of fact, no. I spent a short period working 2 years before I moved on, and then subsequently, after the strikes, I came back. So I wasn't there during the strikes.
Oh, I see. So you, why? Do you mind me asking why you left? To go out, where did you go when you left?
Well, I joined a company of management consultants, UK-based, but working in Ireland, and received training from them, which I found quite valuable. And it was more in tune with the studies and the courses I had studied in the United States. So okay. It was putting my postgraduate experience and training to better use.
And you only spent, so it started with 2 years, mm-hmm. and then you left and you went to the UK. And how long were you in the UK before you came back?
Well, I was actually trained in the UK, but working in Ireland and working right around the country in a number of different industries. And eventually got tired of the travelling and the nomadic lifestyle of a consultant, and found that Clondalkin Paper Mills were interested in having me back. So I rejoined them.
What year did you go back in?
1970. So I spent from there until about 1978 with them. And that time the company had, Clondalkin Paper Mills had acquired other businesses. Following on from the Swiftbrook and the Drimna operations, they then acquired Bailey Gibson and also a company down in Cork, Guy, a company, a printing company, and Cahill's and a number of other. So it was becoming a group rather than a single entity. And
What were the differences that you experienced from the time that you were there initially to the time that you came back again?
Well, it was a much more progressive operation and probably more profitable. The group was more profitable and the group was able to support some degree of losses in the papermaking operation.
Was there a change of management?
No, Dr. Cusack was still managing director and was until, can't remember when he retired, but it was certainly late 70s to my knowledge.
Was there a class order?
Well, I don't like to think there was, but I suppose the reality is that you had the chief executive. And that was Dr. Cusack, and he was an engineer, and he leaned towards the technical people so that the technical people on the staff, you know, had a fair amount of authority mm-hmm. and carried weight. The chemists, they were also very important because of, A, the technology of making paper was depended very much on their input, and also the pollution problems that I mentioned earlier on. Mm. They had a they were very important in regulating and minimizing the pollution in the River Kamek.
At that time, we're now talking about the 70s when you were back. It was a difficult time in Ireland. I just remember that there was a lot of political unrest.
Unrest and labour rest. And there was a bank strike at that period too.
That's right.
And there was a somewhat militant element in the workforce in Clondalkin.
Were you part of that?
No, I was on that. I was on the edge, on the opposing side, in the sense that I was part of the management structure, so
yes,
I had to endeavour to achieve the management's objective.
And but did you find yourself in confrontation with the workforce?
Well, we had frequent meetings, and we would differ strongly. Yes.
Were they heated meetings?
Well, they could be at times. Emotional, I suppose. There was an unwillingness to change. And, you know, as technical people, we were trying to introduce change, constantly trying to improve operations and techniques and work practices. And there was, to an extent, a resistance, a strong resistance.
Was there any government input by supporting? Was there support coming at any stage?
Well, the original enterprise would not have been established were it not for the government deciding that to impose tariffs and duties on imports of paper into Ireland, and that allowed the paper mill to service the Irish market without competition in the early stage. But by the 60s, with the advent of Le Mas, those restrictions on imports were much reduced, and I think the tariffs virtually abolished. When Ireland signed the Free Trade Agreement, at that point in time, tariffs between the UK and Ireland were eliminated.
I